Well, good morning. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. My first guest is Kim Carson. She's on the line, Summit County Council member, here to talk about last night's meeting. Thank you, Kim. Are you
there?
Good
morning.
Good morning. Yes, so Kim, the neo-Nazi images that we've reported on at the Demolition Derby, comments brought up by Glenn Wright, Councilmember Glenn Wright, can you give us your reaction on this? Have you heard anything from constituents?
You know, I did. I believe, I'm disappointed that it occurred, incredibly disappointed. But I'm hoping that we can work with the person that we contract with and come up with some guidelines for next year. I hate to honestly bring more attention to it at this point, but I think we can do something moving forward. I don't know that it's the person that we contracted, if it's their fault. We've had an incredibly successful demolition derby over the years. It's supposed to be one of the most successful ones in the state. And I think we can establish guidelines and continue that tradition in Summit County.
Yeah, and
it's a family-friendly event, and I think that's everyone's goal.
Yeah, sure. And I recognize that, you know, like the Dukes of Hazzard days in the 70s, where, you know, the images of that flag have been flown and used as just icons of that period. And, you know, I also attended the rodeo this year. And there were some pretty uncomfortable jokes denigrating women and LGBTQ people during the clown acts. And it almost just basically took over his act. And I'm just wondering, have you received any comments on that? And is this the direction that we should be taking?
Well, of course, that's not anything that we would condone. I haven't heard any comments related to that, and we'll have to, you bring up a good point. We have the rodeo coming up this weekend, and we should have a conversation with the announcer to, you know, people are very sensitive right now, especially with recent tragic events, and, we just need to be more sensitive.
Yeah. Well, let's move on. Another story that we've reported on is Rob's Trail. My understanding is you were not at the meeting that Roger Armstrong had attended, but some years back you were involved with a task force that involved dog leash laws. And is it time to revisit this idea and more enforcement on dog leash laws? This story that we had covered, pretty dramatic numbers of people using Rob's Trail and allowing their dogs to defecate on people's private property and just very, very heavy use. What's your thought on all this?
Well, I wasn't at the meeting with the residents, so I didn't hear some of the issues firsthand. I have been included on a letter from a couple of constituents that live in the area. And it's really unfortunate that people go and they're not respectful of those surrounding landowners. The one gentleman I know, he said he had a car actually park in his driveway, and he couldn't leave his home. And so that's a concern. And just all the number of off-leash dogs, that's a concern, too, as they allow their dogs to defecate in the neighbors' yards and don't make any effort to clean that up. I mean, they shouldn't be there in the first place, but if they are, they need to clean up after their dogs, no matter where they are. And so we definitely need to look at how we can better control that parking area, but also our trails in general. I know in the past we've talked about, well, if we get too much pressure from out-of-county residents, then maybe we need to look at some type of a permit system. And I believe that's being talked about again, and our county attorney, Margaret Olson, will be meeting with the Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District Board because I believe it needs to start with them as the governing body, and have them come up with a proposal on how this could possibly be managed. You know, our local residents do pay on their property tax, a tax that supports Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District. And so, of course, anyone within that area would, if they develop something like that, would receive a sticker, or depending on what type of system they develop. And then anybody from out of the area would need to pay for a daily permit or maybe a seasonal permit, something along those lines. But, you know, the Wasatch Front is growing. We're in very close proximity, and we have, you know, a world-renowned trail system. So we're going to be getting more and more pressure on those trails.
So would a permitting system, I mean, is the thought that you would use funds from that to enforce and that kind of thing? I mean, have there been mountain communities like ours?
I mean, most likely, but there haven't been any discussions as to what level. But just like the Forest Service up on the Mirror Lake Highway Trail has a use fee required, so you have to hang your tag in your car or pay for a day use pass. And then those funds are used to support local parking areas, restroom facilities, and that type of thing. So, you know, we do spend a lot of money on upkeep of our trailheads and the trails themselves. And so funds would, I can't imagine they'd be used in any other way to continue to support that.
But just to get back to that, so there's some sense that the people who are abusing private property and dog leash laws are that they tend to be from out of the area? Is that what's being suggested?
Well, we don't know that. We really don't. I don't think there's been a lot of actual ticketing done, because that would be the only way you'd get people's names and addresses. I think most local people are more respectful because they're here, they pay to support them, and they're aware through our local news media, like KPCW, of, you know, the issues and what the rules are.
Sure. Okay, well, let's move on to some other things on the agenda. There was an update on Hideout's annexation expansion plans. Hideout folks have this idea that the letter that they received from Tom Fisher was expressing Tom's personal views. So is the council preparing to send a letter to the town of Hideout regarding their annexation declaration?
Yes, we will basically, I mean, we approved Tom's letter and we were CC'd on that letter, but we will be sending a letter that mirrors the content of that one, but it will be signed by Roger Armstrong on behalf of the county council.
Okay, and
there wasn't really any new information. I know staff or representatives from Wasatch County, Summit County, Park City, and Hideout out will be meeting in the near future. So I look forward to hearing the outcome of that meeting. I know they've already made or proposed some changes to their annexation boundary based on input from Park City to remove areas that have some controlling factor for Park City. However, there's some other lands that we're still very concerned about that are within Summit County and are not consistent with our planning objectives and could really be detrimental as far as traffic impacts.
Yeah, so are we...
So we'll be sure to continue to express our concern in those areas.
And are you referring to agricultural and rural residential zoning areas? Is that what you're referring to, or...?
Yes.
Okay. And you
I mean, we need to continue that. I think high density in that area is going to really exacerbate the traffic issues that we have. We've done a lot to try to put higher density areas. We've unfortunately inherited a sprawling land pattern with neighborhoods, you know, that were established 20, 30 years ago. But now we want to see development more concentrated so we can provide transit services to those areas. And that area, if it were to be highly developed, would really affect traffic on 248. And I think it would also affect traffic into the Kimball Junction area.
Okay. Can you describe roughly which areas we're talking about, where the Summit County areas fall under the Hideout Plan?
Which lands?
Mm-hmm. Just so listeners kind of have an idea of what the property is we're talking about.
Well, it's everything in the Richardson Flat area generally that Summit County, to the west of Highway 248. Some of the lands to the east of Highway 248 are actually in Wasatch County, and a lot of people probably don't realize that. The development you see on 248 as you head into Camas, the majority of that development in there is all within the county limits of Wasatch County. And on the other side along Highway 40, the county line is approximately just before you reach the top of the hill. The maps we were supplied didn't actually show the county line, so I hate to try to define it when I haven't seen it on the, clearly on a map, but we've requested that. So when this comes back before us again, we'll have a map that shows the county line. But it's basically that corner, the southeast corner of the intersection of 248 and 40.
Okay.
That we're concerned about.
And can legally, if Hideout wanted to annex, can Summit County object? Is there a legal recourse?
We can. Current state law says that we have to consent to that. If the request comes from a municipality in another county.
Okay. You approved a purchase agreement so that the Snyderville Rec District owns the entire interest in the Triangle parcel. What will the Rec District do with that property?
It will be managed as recreational open space. It's a great location for that since it sits adjacent to the wildlife tunnel underneath 40 that connects Round Valley and the east side of 40. And when Park City and Summit County first purchased the Triangle parcel together, we talked about some of it eventually being reserved for recreational open space, but we also talked about some other what we call back-of-house uses such as a maintenance facility and possibly a transit maintenance facility. And we still have a goal to have land for that use in an area, but when Snyderville Basin bought out Park City's half of the Triangle, part of that agreement was that we would manage it, the entire parcel, as recreational open space.
Okay.
So we look forward to now the entire parcel will be one cohesive unit managed under Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District, and we look forward to hearing what their programming ideas are in the future.
Okay. Just quickly, you wanted to mention the Century Farm and Ranch Awards before we close up here.
Yes, we had two really exciting presentations for Utah Century Farm and Ranch Awards, which are awarded to farms who have been in continuous family ownership and management for at least 100 years. And that means that the original owner, it has to have been passed down to a son, daughter, or direct grandchild. And so we have two farms, the Richens family homestead, and then also the Double Diamond Ranch. So our congratulations to both of those families, and our we send them our gratitude for the way that they've managed those properties over the years and kept it in their families. And it's something they're extremely proud of.
Yes, yes, I imagine so. Well, thank you, Kim. Appreciate this update.
You're welcome.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Well, you're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. It's 8:30. My next guest is Brian Stevens. He is the Summit County Mosquito Abatement Director, and he's here to talk to us about mosquitoes, I imagine.
Yeah.
So there do seem to be a lot of them this year, in my backyard especially, I also seem to be tracking them down like in the middle of the night as they're buzzing around my ears and that kind of thing. So tell us about mosquitoes this year. Is it just our very wet spring?
Yeah, the wet spring had a lot to do with it. You know, we've had more water than we normally have had, so that's caused us to have more mosquitoes around. So that's been a lot of it, yeah.
Yeah, so you're probably doing more treatments this year the last 4 or 5 years?
Technicians in every part of Summit County going around surveying water to make sure, you know, we're out there finding spots where mosquitoes are breeding and treating those areas. So hopefully we're, you know, do our best to stay on top of them. But, you know, there may be spots where, with the wet spring, that there may be water that we're not quite aware of. And so there may be spots that we're not getting. So,
okay, so yeah. Tell our listeners a little bit about what abatement is and how you work.
Sure. Well, what our job is you know, because I've alluded to, you know, we go around and find areas in the county that have water, particularly standing water, where would be conducive for mosquitoes to breed, and we dip the water. And if there's mosquito larvae in that water, we treat that with, it's a biorational chemical that we use. It's actually a bacteria that's targeted to kill mosquito larvae. So that's our primary means. That's, you know, what we would like to do is find them when they're aquatic. We have a much better chance of killing more mosquitoes if we can find them when they're in the water in the larval stage. So that's primarily what our technicians are doing, going around the county surveying spots of where water are, and then treating that if they do find mosquito larvae.
And is it's typically standing water? So
typically
you're not
standing,
like,
yeah. Running water,
Provo,
mosquitoes don't. Yeah, they don't like, you know, flowing creeks and rivers and things like that. Ditches, you know, they don't. And unless water pools along the, you know, along that body of water, then we typically don't have to worry about those areas. It's typically standing water.
And what about private property?
We have
water.
Yeah, citizens and landowners in the county are good about us letting us go on their land and treating that. Cause that's a big part of the county is private ownership. So that's key for us to be able to get on that property and treat that water. You know, we have in several parts of the county, not so much Park City, but you know, up in the Camas Valley or in the North Summit areas, we have irrigated farm ground. So that's critical that we are able to get on that.
So is this biological treatment done in the water? Are there other abatement
We do have other chemicals that we do use. And again, most of them are targeted towards mosquitoes. You know, that we've moved away from, you know, the heavy chemicals and moved towards biorationals. So,
okay,
yeah.
Biorationals. And other bugs or pests that you handle or deal with?
Well, we're primarily mosquitoes. We don't do much other than mosquitoes. Yeah.
Okay. I'm wondering.
Well, I really anything other than mosquitoes. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm wondering if we need to put on our property tax a marmot abatement.
There's a lot of those
department.
We see around for sure. But yeah, we don't. You know, in this time of year we see a lot of deer flies. You know, people ask us about deer flies, but we don't do anything with deer flies. So
it may be obvious, but why mosquitoes? Why?
Well, I'm sorry.
They're annoying.
They are
sure,
annoying, absolutely. But beyond the annoyance factor, you know, they're a vector for a lot of different diseases, for sure. You know, we're familiar, of course, with West Nile, and that's what we need to be primarily concerned with up here. But, you know, people have probably heard of Zika or dengue or chikungunya, encephalitis. All of these are diseases that are carried by mosquitoes. And so, you know, while annoyance is a factor for sure, you know, mosquitoes are disease carriers.
Sure. And are there certain parts of the country that have more virulent mosquito diseases than others?
Well, you know, like in the warmer climate areas, like, you know, Florida, they have to be more concerned about diseases than we do. For example, you know, chikungunya, dengue, or Zika, we don't have to be concerned about. But you know, our biggest concern, of course, is West Nile.
Sure. And have we had any reports of West Nile?
No, West Nile in the county.
Summit?
You know, we besides dipping water, we also are out there trapping adult mosquitoes so that we can send them in for testing. So that if we do have the virus, we can catch it and, you know, go to those areas and treat for adult mosquitoes. So fingers crossed, we don't have any West Nile in the county that we've found in our mosquito pools. And I think the last time we found it was in 2007 within the county. So, you know, we've been very fortunate that we haven't had any reports of West Nile within our mosquito pools. But, you know, things happen, things change. You know, we've got the reports down in the Wasatch Valley of mosquitoes or West Nile and mosquito pools. So
okay, so it's being found at
it's
lower
being found in other
elevations,
areas, yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
So what about our pets or livestock? Are they susceptible to mosquito disease born?
Yeah, they are. Primarily horses. Horses are susceptible to West Nile. Certainly it will affect them. So, you know, if you're a horse owner, that's something you want to be concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
But other pets, typically not a problem. But there are, you know, there's dog heartworm. Mosquitoes will carry the vector or their vectors for that. So that's, but we've had no reports of that. So,
okay.
But there, that is something that they are known to carry as well.
Yeah. So how big is your team? How many?
Well, we
have
about 21 technicians in the field every day, surveying water, treating.
And that's just during the months
Yeah. So we run from about May to September is our season.
Okay. And
fortunately, you know, since we live in a higher elevation, you know, when that cool starts to set in, it's really beneficial for us because it really really quiets the mosquito population down, and so
when we have
a big freeze, then it's over.
It's over. Is there ever a situation where the heat causes them to die off?
No, not so much
at all.
Heat.
Like hot
yeah.
days, or no?
Yeah, they'll find places to roost in the day, and mm-hmm. but no, the heat typically that won't kill them off. It's the cold.
Well, I can tell you from a personal anecdote. I was on the Colorado River several weeks ago and have never experienced mosquito bites like I had there. It was a ravaging.
Yeah, there's definitely areas. Is that down in the Moab area?
Yes.
Yeah, there's Moab, I know, is having a struggle. There's, you know, it's interesting. Different parts of the state will, you know, just struggle more than others. And it's just, you know, every year is different for us. Every year's, you know, no year's the same.
Yeah.
So
anything you want to say that we didn't talk about that people ought to know?
Well, I guess one thing is, you know, people can help us if they want to. What causes mosquitoes to, as we've talked about, is they need water. And so if people want to look around their yards, if they find that they're holding water in buckets or, you know, even dog dishes or troughs are a big one. Areas in their yard that just, you know, they're seeing standing water, you know, they need to empty those out. If it's like a dog dish, empty it out and then refill it. Because, you know, I've seen dog dishes where people haven't emptied the dog dish out and mosquitoes are actually growing there. So that's a big help.
Yeah, daily.
So, yeah, or if they're just seeing standing water around their house, it's not going away. You know, this time of year, typically it'll start drying out, but as wet as it's been, that's been a struggle for us. So some areas have not dried out yet, so they can do that. And then also, just, you know, if you're seeing mosquitoes, just protect yourself, wear DEET, long pants in the evening, things like that, what people can do to kind of help themselves as well. So
And there are no natural kinds of products that help with repellent?
DEET's the best. It really is. Yeah.
I mean, that's what you hear. That's what you need. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Just don't ingest it if you can try
it. Yeah, exactly. Just be careful. Maybe rub-ons would be the best way to go there. So.
Okay. Well, Brian Stevens, Summit County Mosquito Abatement Director. Thank you for that update.
Okay.
I appreciate you coming
by. Thanks for
having
me. Thank you.
And
Ms. Murray.
You can call me Carolyn.
All right. Carolyn it is. And thank you, Carolyn. I was disorganized and I didn't get your name, and I wanted to have it, and I wanted to have it right.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Excellent. So Carolyn, re-ask your question.
Well,
guitar 13. Yes.
Yes, and I'm not going to put you on the spot to declare your age, but you have had a 50-year
career. Oh, by the way, I don't mind at all. I was born November 21st, 1950, and so I am 68 years old.
Okay. And you were born in Boston. You were raised in North Carolina, according to your bio.
That's my bio. You got that right.
And we're not going to focus on your musical family, but let's talk about, you recorded your first record at the age of 18. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that extraordinary endeavor?
Well, what happened was I was living in Boston. I wasn't much of a student. I was 16 years old. I played the guitar, but I really understood that I was going to need to invent a life. And I looked at myself getting out of the shower, and I was 130 pounds soaking wet. And it was clear that hard physical labor was probably not going to be an option. But I played the guitar, and I sang, and I was starting to write songs, and I just went after it very aggressively. And I pieced together, Carolyn, this 50 year of performing retrospective CD, a collection that I just put out. And as I went back to when I was 17 and 18, it really surprises me what a good guitar player I was in those early times.
And you have also pursued a variety of musical genres, folk and pop and gospel and jazz, and you've even done some storytelling through the years.
Yes.
So what, do you have a favorite genre? Do you have something that really speaks to you and makes your soul come alive?
It speaks to me at different times. I mean, sometimes I'll get with an audience, and well, what the heck? They'll just need a little bit of preaching, and we'll fire that up. But other times, an audience needs to laugh. Sometimes they need to cry. They need to cry like babies. And I love it when an audience is so safe in my hands that they can just cry. And I got a couple of songs that sometimes I'll look at somebody in my audience and I'll go, that song make you cry. And they go, yes. And I go, that's fine. Made me cry too.
Yeah.
It's so joyous for me to be in the presence of my audience and just be reminded how much I love them. It's, love playing.
Sure. And, you know,
and I love having, as you suggest, having those options, to be able to, folk music was my original underpinning, but listening to a lot of Bachrach David, a lot of Gershwin, a lot of Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein, Rodgers and Hart, Cole Porter. So there's a lot of that infrastructure then bleeding into the melodies of the Beatles and great Billy Joel and I mean and the a woman who's written a lot for my beautiful brother James, Carol King. And so it's been a very, it's been a wonderful adventure. And I work very hard on my music all the time. I practice a lot, and I really like being a terrific player.
Sure. And you also tell stories. And it's not just for children.
Oh, I tell stories. No. I mean, children can listen in because I'm rarely profane or with, it's just not my style to be negative or inappropriate. I prefer appropriate and enthusiastic. And, I mean, there are stories to all of these songs. There are twists and tales, and I love. I've been a professor at the Berklee College of Music in Boston for 30 years, and I've taught a course on stage performance there, Carolyn. And so, to be able to introduce songs, set them up, put them in the proper context, speak about what the writers were thinking and doing. Oh, no, I love telling tales. Yeah.
Well, as far as your appearance here at the Egyptian, Janice Ian will be performing with you. Is that correct?
Yes, I will be opening this show. Janice Ian, who is very, she is, that woman is the real thing. She is strong and tuneful. And, Janice is wonderful. We've worked together over the years. And just have this August a series of dates starting here in Park City at the Egyptian. And, we'll work for the next few weeks together. But Friday, Saturday, Sunday here.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
So do you have any worries about performing at 7,000 feet altitude?
No, I don't, because just a little while ago, I was I was over at, what's that rotten ski resort over to the south? Snowbird. Oh, yes, that's right. I was up at the top of the tram on Snowbird at 11,000 feet. Doing a small concert for a group of people up there. I handle 11,000. I also fly airplanes, so I'm used to being up at altitude. And I've got a beat-up old plane that I fly around the east. But, I'm well used to 7,000. That'll be fine.
Okay. Well, and in looking at your touring schedule, it does sound like you're a pretty busy performer.
Yes.
Yeah. So you've got Park City
here.
I
love to play.
Yeah.
I love to be on stage.
Yeah. And is it? And it looks to me like it goes through December. But then I was even looking further into your schedule. You've got things scheduled even for early next year. It looks like.
Oh yeah.
Is that right?
No. No. This tour started in 1968. It's going to go through 2047. Then we're going to take 2 weeks off and start the second half of the tour.
Okay. That's fantastic. Anything special you want to tell our listeners and let people in on anything in particular you're going to bring to the shows this weekend?
The only thing that I would like to say is just how excited I am to be back in the great state of Utah. I come here a couple of times a year. I come to ski here. And I have dear friends here, and it's really like a second home for me. So I'm really excited to be back, and in particular in Park City. And we are going to party!
Well, thank you. Livingston Taylor, performing with Janice Ian this weekend, the 9th, 10th, and 11th at 8 o'clock at the Egyptian Theater. Thank you for joining us.
Carolyn, thanks for your time. We'll speak soon.
Yes, take care.
Bye.
Bay. My next guest, this is the Local News Hour. It's 8:52. My next guests are Heather Sims with the Youth Sports Alliance, Programs Director, and Jenna Dalton, who is the Development Director there. And they're here to give us an update on this weekend, or excuse me, this upcoming few months activities. Mm-hmm. And boy, you've got a busy schedule, it looks like.
Yes, we do. Yes.
So yeah, let's first start off. School is coming up here. It's back to school time. What about the after-school programs, Heather? Will you give us an update on what's happening there?
Yes, so we hope to open registration hopefully at the end of next week. Believe it or not, school just before school starts. But we have some really fun new programs that we've added to our roster, including welding with Kimball Arts, and we do rowing, and we've got a new program with some local Summit County sheriffs called Blue Line Combatives, and they're going to be doing some self-defense classes, as well as cooking and mountain biking. And then we also have programs out in South Summit now. And so they're going to be doing biathlon and some mountain biking and photography, as well as our Get Out and Play programs, again, which is mountain biking and triathlon. So we are going to be full on come mid-September, back in the swing of after-school programs.
And the South Summit programming is new.
Yes, that's right. So last year was our first year, and we offered one activity every 4 weeks. And now we are offering three activities. And all our programs are bite-sized. They're affordable. And, you know, it's not a huge commitment when you're doing 4 weeks. But we're hoping to try and find a little spark in a child that they go on to do something with that activity that they've now learned.
Now, all these after-school programs, are they for elementary, primary age, or do you go into secondary schools?
No, we do. So Get Out and Play is our first through fifth graders, and then the Activate is for sixth through ninth. So that's Ecker Hill, Treasure, and then South Summit Middle School. And then Silver Summit is another school that has added us to our programming. So,
the Silver Summit Academy.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. So my understanding, too, is that there's a plan a little longer range to reach into Wasatch County as well?
There is, yes. The long-term plan is to eventually reach the whole of Summit County and into Wasatch County. You know, we have such great activities here in Park City and great partners. And some of our partners actually have employees in those areas, and they work full-time too, and they want their kids to have the same opportunities as our local Park City kids.
Well, yeah, it's amazing. Biathlon and yoga and welding. And I think I would, can I sign
I know.
Up? Wow. Yeah, so okay. Well, let's talk about the YSA Stein Erickson Dare to Dream Scholarship Program. Jana, the application window has opened.
It has. So we're very happy to provide scholarships to athletes that are in our seven winter sports clubs here in Park City. You know, a lot of these kids, they try programs and get out and play. They love it, so they want to move on and continue in their sport. But oftentimes it's difficult with finances and may not be affordable for everybody. So we have the Stein Erickson Opportunity Endowment that provides scholarships, again, to these seven winter sports clubs and junior level athletes. The application window opened on August the 1st and closes September the 1st. We provide scholarships in the fall and in the spring. However, we've changed it up a little bit this year, and we're asking applicants to, when they apply, to apply for the entire year's program in the fall. Spring applicants are only open to athletes that have been invited to summer camps or regional camps. So when they're applying in the fall, we ask that they apply for the entire year-long program.
How many families apply typically?
Typically we get approximately 100 athletes that apply. So it's quite a large number, and you know, we do our best to award as many as we can, and you know, we're very happy and pleased that we have this endowment that allows us to do this. So.
And are there age restrictions?
There are. So the applicants have to be under 21 years of age when they are applying.
Okay. Okay. Yes. And let's talk about the Jan's Winter Welcome.
Yeah, so
ticket sales.
39th annual Jan's Winter Welcome is October the 26th at Stein Erickson Lodge again. We're so excited. Ticket sales did open on August the 1st, as well as tables. You know, we're selling a lot. We're about 70% sold out. So if you are interested in attending, please do, you know, sign up immediately on our website at ysaparkcity.org. Tickets will be going fast.
Okay.
We also have our opportunity drawing. So all of the sales from the opportunity drawing go directly back to the Seven Winter Sports Clubs. And that grand prize this year is a Greek island cruise for two on a 148-passenger sailboat. So it's a little different than your traditional cruise ship. It's very unique. It's going to be an amazing trip. So,
yeah, boy, that sounds like a really special event.
Absolutely.
So just to get an idea, what's the rundown on the ticket costs,
sure,
and table costs, that type of thing?
Individual tickets are $375. And then we have three table sponsorship levels. Bronze is $4,000, silver is $5,000, and the gold table is $6,000. With the gold sponsorship, you also receive a night at Stein Erickson Lodge the evening of the 26th, a lovely bottle of champagne on your table, and preferential seating, as well as advertisements in our program. So
okay,
it's a great way to you know, sponsor the evening and help our athletes out. So
okay. And Heather, let's go back to you. Bow Collective Best Day Ever,
yes,
event.
Yes. So Bow Collective, a local fitness organization in town, are offering 20% back on August 24th on their best day ever. They have classes throughout the day, and they have a kids class at 3 o'clock, and the 20% will go straight back to our scholarship programs.
Well, okay, let's just get a quick update then for all of the after school programs. If you want to sign up, you can do that at what, back to school?
Yeah, we'll be at the back to school nights, but also at ysaparkcity.org. They can go online, and registration, we hope, will be open next week. Also on the website will be the Jan's Winter Welcome tickets.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, Heather Sims and Jenna Dalton with the Youth Sports Alliance. Appreciate you coming by.